The Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
Make Money Mondays brought to you by BDO's financial services team, helping you keep pace with fintech and regulations in financial services. Basitsana Khumalo, welcome to The Money Show.
Thank you so much, Bruce. Thank you for having me.
You've been channeling Michelle Obama. And don't you think your book cover, My Journey of Hope, is like Michelle's book? I think it feels the same. It's got the same sort of quiet poise and dignity.
Very gracious of you.
Well, really? It looks deliberate to me.
Well, I think one is inspired by great women across the world. And of course, which woman is not inspired by Michelle Obama's story and her journey and her becoming? And so my journey of hope really stems from owning my own truth, but more so, you know, paying it forward to men and women who've inspired my life, and honoring their legacy, but even then taking it further by passing on the baton to a new generation.
Tonight is your story, and it's your story with money. I just love how you grew up as a hustler.
Oh.
And you making sandwiches at home and going to football games, and your dad, who was at one point was a hospital clerk at Baragwanath, and then became a Putco bus driver, and then had an injured his shoulder in an accident, and then sort of making bricks and becoming a builder, and did very, very well out of that, and built the family home in Soweto like that. And mom as also just a fierce protagonist of independence. I mean, your folks sent you out to work really early.
I started to work with money from an early age. I think it's Robert Kiyosaki who says that we need to teach our children to work with money from an early age, because I think it's in his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
And so at the age of six, I used to sell lollipops on the school ground, like you say, eggs up and down my street in Kilane next to Mzimhlophe, where I grew up. And I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family, so it runs in my DNA. Since the age of 20, I've been self-employed, and over the years created many jobs, hundreds of jobs, for daring to dream in the power of my dreams as an entrepreneur. So dabbling with money really started quite early, Bruce.
I mean, I think your mom and dad didn't have a lot of money, but they ensured that you were taught some very real and quite tough lessons quite young, in terms of, you know, lots of support, go out and hustle, do some work.
No Ivy League institution could have taught me what I learned from my mother and father's house. No business school could have taught me when we're making sandwiches in the assembly line in the kitchen. Like you highlight, my father was a bus driver, my mother was a teacher. But to be able to supplement the family income, my siblings and I did what we needed to do to help put, you know, food on the table, to help our parents, you know, to continue to keep a roof over our heads. And so growing up in that environment, it ignites something in you. There's a blueprint that I only know, and that is hard work pays. The hustler in me comes from the hood, understanding that one has to write a different trajectory for one's lives because of where we come from as a people, as black people specifically. You know, we think back even post-apartheid in 1994, when a new government, a new leadership that came into power had to literally re-engineer a different economy. So when I was 20, understanding my role in 1994, winning the crown at that time, the advent of new democracy, just the zeitgeist of that era, I understood that I needed to walk a path and even chronicle it in the future, but I had to experience life as an entrepreneur, life as a mother, life as a friend, as a sister, in terms of being able to bring a whole new sense of hope. So, you know, 1994, we were challenged. And so we became a people that literally are no different from what happened in Europe post-World War II. So we had to begin to write a whole new narrative. And minerals was what we were literally about post-1994. But of course, fast forward, 1998, we had the crash. So the entrepreneurs in all of us, we needed to continue to reinvent. And the crash literally in 1998 wiped out 2 million jobs. And when that happened, it was also, you know, only 4 years. Literally, the new South Africa, the new leadership, literally doubled the size of you know, the black middle class. So we fast forward, we find ourselves 25 years later. We are still challenged in so many ways as a country, as a people. But it's going to take entrepreneurs, focused individuals who are ready, willing to stand in the front line to be able to make sure that our next 25 years as a people, as a country, as a nation is even more inspiring. It also gives more hope to other nations, our African brothers across the continent. So the entrepreneur in me just lives.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I want to get to today in a moment, but I just love... unfortunately, the picture pages aren't marked, but just after page 50, you've got a whole section of pages, and you refer in the book to the photograph of your mum holding your baby brother, Mojalima. And you're bawling
and
your eyes
howling.
Mojalefa is getting all the attention. Yeah. And your mom's holding your hand and going, oh, child. But you were in age terms, very close to Mojalefa. Have you forgiven him for coming into this world?
I have. I love him to bits. He's the only Makhalimele who holds my father's surname. My elder sister, Lerato, is married to the Mehlape family. My second sister, Johanna, is married to the Mokokis. And I'm a Kumalo. And so Mojalefa Makhalimele, I had to forgive him. He's carrying the lineage and the surname. But he completely discombobulated me when he arrived a year later and literally took my shine. But
you got it back. You got it back. It was fine. Do you remember the moment? I mean, you won, I think, what is it, Miss Northern Transvaal?
Quite right.
Was the first big contest on the way to Miss South Africa. But that day that you won Miss South Africa in 1994, becoming the first black woman to become Miss South Africa, it must have been a huge moment. I mean, on so many different levels. One, you won this great competition, but two, the symbolism and the importance and the timing of it and the role that you were going to play and the relationship you developed with Nelson Mandela. I mean, all of these things must have been quite overwhelming.
Indeed, for a 20-year-old, but I have to just make one correction. Jackie Mofokeng won Miss South Africa in 1993. She was the first.
I wasn't paying attention. You see, forgive
but
me.
You read the book very well. I'm super impressed, by the way. You really read my book.
I'm reading fast.
So Jackie won in 1993, and just the vitriol and the diabolic manner that the white media received her was just, it was just unacceptable. So in the book, I do pay tribute to her and homage to her because she paved the way for me. So I win, of course, in 1994, and Madiba is our new leader. It's new.
Your timing
South
was so much better. Your timing was
I
so much better than Jackie's.
I couldn't have picked it myself, even if I tried. And I win at a time where we are on the international stage as a country.
Yeah.
The world is watching how this new nation is going to come forth, and I, of course, you know, end up having the greatest privilege to travel with Madiba. Let me actually take you back. When I won, I get this call from Zelda Lekhranji, who used to look after Papa. And so Zelda says, the president would like to speak to you. I'm like, yeah, right.
Of course
it is. This not April Fool, but it's September. So, and I take the call, and it is indeed Madiba on the other line. And he said, congratulations, our queen. We are very proud of you. And I would love maybe the honor to have lunch with the queen. And indeed, the relationship of this great mentor in my life began. And so it just has been... The timing, Bruce, of 1994, as I highlight, and me winning in 1994, I think it gave a new sense of hope to young people, to youth, that they too can. So I became the face of democracy, the new face of hope. And indeed, we are here 25 years later, and we continue to hopefully every day inspire a new generation of dynamic leaders.
I mean, I look at the pictures of you and Madiba, and I look at the pictures of you and Romeo. And Romeo dreams have been looked at like you looked at Madiba. I'm sure. I mean, sheer adoration. I mean,
we had the most beautiful connection with Madiba, and sheer admiration of the first president of the world, really, for me. Somebody who taught me about servant leadership. I used to break bread with great wisdom. What a privilege. And indeed, I adored him. And it's also about paying tribute to him in my book and the contribution he's made in my life. And so when I look at him with those doting eyes, I think Khumalo is a tad perhaps jealous.
I think it's just a touch. Now, you got the top billing job quite soon after that. It must have put you in touch with lots of very famous people. You love Oprah, of course. You've had the privilege of traveling and meeting lots of really interesting people. But that early, again, really young age, you're now living a life which is way beyond the lifestyle that you grew up in. You're living a life, then you're exposed to lifestyles of people who are living this high and fancy, highfalutin, top billing lifestyle. What impact did that have on you?
So I've got a chapter in the book, Lights, Camera, Action. And indeed, when I was thrusted into the limelight by the greatest opportunity as well, where I met my current business partner, Patience Stevens, and that's how I ended up presenting top billing. She's the producer. She's the brainchild. Back in 1993, when she came up with this idea of this lifestyle show that's seriously become iconic. I mean, there's even a top billing house, this top billing speak in dictionary. So to then be exposed to world shakers, history makers, across the political spectrum, in the arts, in Hollywood, and to be able to just sit interview those people that you only heard about, that you knew that, wow, these are great, great people making, living their truth and just making the world a better place through whatever contribution they're making in different spheres. And so it was quite overwhelming, especially in the beginning, very daunting. I used to be absolutely a nervous wreck. Even when I went, to Hollywood to do press junkets, whether it was to interview Will Smith or Denzel. This kid.
Will's got to have a surname. Denzel doesn't get a surname. Denzel's just Denzel. Will gets a surname.
We love us some Denzel. To be able to then wake up and you find yourself in the space, first of all, to just travel the world, to get on an aeroplane, was a big deal for me, because the furthest I had been outside of Johannesburg was to Durban. My dad had a bucket, a Datsun bucket, where he packed us like sardines with my siblings, and we went to Mgababa Beach. So now here is this child from Soweto, 9005 M. Sichana Street, traveling the world. And hanging out with like cool people, super awesome. My 20s were just an incredible time. My 20s allowed me to figure out what do I really want to do and become. And it's kudos to top billing that 25 years later, my voice still has relevance. Because, of course, television as a medium is very powerful.
It's cruel. It's cruel because very often careers are short-lived. Basetsana Khumalo is our guest this evening, Make Money Mondays. We're reflecting on her life so far. She's written a book on the life so far. I'm sure there will be edition number two, Basi, My Journey of Hope. But we're going to be talking to her about money and how she deals with it now. And she had upbringing in Soweto as a kid of the hustle. Does she make her kids do the hustle? We'll learn about that in a moment.
The Money Show. Make Money Mondays.
Basetsana Khumalo is our Make Money Monday special edition guest. Do you make your kids hustle? Do you get them to get the same sort of early age experience with money that you had?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we sit at a dinner table and we discuss stocks and options to get an input, especially with my 14-year-old, Ungosinathi. And it's a conscious decision to bring them up in the understanding that they need to write their own narrative and fulfill their own destiny. Because if you look at where the future is going with the fourth industrial revolution, some of the formal jobs we know are going to become obsolete. So one can only inspire them to also you know, be entrepreneurs so they can be able to chart whatever path they can for themselves. So, and one of the conscious things that I do as well, especially with birthdays, is that when the kids get given money, especially Bontle and Khosizile, I'm teaching them how to save. So I taught them that, you know, I took them to my bank and we opened, and I didn't get the private banker to come home, but I took them to the bank and so they could understand what is a bank, what does a bank do. That's where you go and save money, because the money grows. I break it down for the little ones in simple speak. So it is important, I think, to be able to be conscious in our parenting, because I'm the product of that conscious parenting.
Yeah, and then just teach them about bank charges too. But that's another story. Don't destroy their spirit. I mean, at what stage did you first have a bank account? What stage did you start actually investing money?
I was doing my first year at the University of Venda in Northern Transvaal, which is of course Limpopo today. And my mom opened a Bob T account for me, and they used to put 50 rands into my account. So
you could like survive for a whole year on that, Zach.
Do you know what I mean? And my parents, especially my mom, always encouraged us that if you ever make a little bit of money in life, don't buy a flashy car. Buy property. And so I started buying property, my first property, at the age of 21, just after I handed over my crown. And so I've always had an interest in property ever since, in acquiring properties. And so I think for me, that imprint that I understood, that my mother used to sit around. So we used to even count the profits around the kitchen table. And then they taught us how to budget, that this amount we're going to put towards this, that amount is going to go towards that. So I saw us counting the pennies as we're growing up, and I'm trying to teach that to hashtag the tribe.
Okay, I mean it's good to have that basis and that knowledge. Nowadays, do you have teams of financial advisors and people queuing up around the block? How do you manage money now?
I do have a team of advisors.
It's your squad.
Look, I guess. How do I manage money? I'm a very conscious spender. I treat money with much respect. I'm very aware of what I want to invest in. So I do look at options, even offshore, with the advice, obviously, of some of my squad, to use your word. And I think when you respect money, money looks after you and it respects you in return. You can only drive one car at a time. So I only have one car.
Now be honest about this. Do you buy new cars, flashy cars? Because your dad and mom, I mean, there was the old Peugeot, then there was the Datsun Bucky. They didn't waste money on cars.
No.
Have you broken that promise?
No, I haven't. People who know me, my friends, know that I only drive one car at a time.
So you park one in the garage and take another one?
Not at all. My husband and I each only have one car, literally. And then the kids have their car to, you know, be taken, you know, to school if I can't do it myself,
or sure.
To birthday parties if I can't do it myself, because I'm texting mama on the weekends. So and I think I'm so conscious in how I use the gifting and the privilege. I'd rather employ more people. I'd rather mentor. I'd rather put other kids through university, and that's why we have a family foundation that gives back. So I'm conscious in that I could use this for the greater good. Do I really need another flashy car? No, I don't, because I was raised like that. It's funny that you picked up the Peugeot part in the book. My parents used to only buy secondhand cars. And there used to be so much trouble. I mean, in the wintertime, Baba would open that bonnet and it has to start this car and then hot water on it to get it going. And really, the first new brand new car was the car we won at Miss South Africa. And my dad used to, you know, travel with me and drive me around, because when I won, I didn't even have a driver's license. So Papa used to be with me all the time. So that's really the first brand new car that we drove as a family.
Any have you done something embarrassing with money in terms of wasting money?
Yeah, I've had very frivolous, spur-of-the-moment decisions to travel overseas on a Wednesday. It's a Wednesday, okay, and then I decided, you know, on a Friday, this is, you know, when I was still single, and my husband and I used to, like, okay, let's go to, I mean, we did a trip to, which is in the book, we wanted to go skiing and went to this country. So I'm trying actually not to mention the country because it was just a bad decision. Then we arrived and it wasn't what we were sold on the net. And we left the country literally 5 hours later. We said, okay, where do we go now? We then said, the next flight out of this country is where we're going. And, you know, so one has been, you know, a youngster.
Don't you miss those days of no responsibility?
Where you were carefree and you just did what you wanted to do. Now, you know, as a parent, which is such a blessing and a gift, the responsibilities are different. The joy is different. The fulfillment is different. Yeah.
Basi, thank you for coming in. Basasane Khumalo, My Journey of Hope is the book. That's some of her story. There are a lot more stories, fabulous stories, and some real heart-wrenching tales told of some really difficult times that she's worked through during her life so far. Basi, thanks for coming in.